Salam, and welcome to the Logic of the Birds podcast. With me today to discuss the poetry of Hafez is Dr. Sayed Hossein Nasser, a university professor at George Washington University. Professor Nas, I wanted to ask you about your relationship with Hafez. When were you first introduced to Hafez, and what have you come to appreciate about his poetry over the course of your life?
First of all, let me say that I had a great blessing from God to be born into a family which was very highly educated and which a great deal of Persian poetry, but always present. I was made to memorize Persian poems when I was only 3-4 years old, right after the verse of the Quran. And I was introduced to Hafez very early, although Hafez's poetry is very difficult, along with Sa'di and Ferdowsi and Nizami and Attar and the other great Persian poets. My father was one of the greatest authorities of Persian language and literature. He was a poet in the country. He had a session that he had once a week or once every other week with some of the leading scholars of Iran, some of whom were also prime ministers and ministers of very high level, but extremely well-educated people. And he would take me along. And session would last for about 3:30 in the afternoon until about 7:30, 3-4 hours, and we came back home for dinner. And they would take usually one verse of Hafez and read it and discuss it all those 3-4 hours, sometimes 2-3 verses. It was really absolutely amazing. Of course, as a child, I didn't understand anything that went on. But a lot went into my head without even my being aware of it, you might say. The significance of Hafez became very important for me. And my father made me read the whole Diwan of Hafez with him before I was 10 years old. And Hafez is very, very difficult. Besides Sa'diyya, Gulistan, and things like that, and some of the poetry of the Shahnameh, Ferdowsi, these three classical books. But when I was 10 years old, my father presented me with a small volume of the Diwan of Hafez, which miraculously I still have. After my lover would plunder everything, was lost during the revolution, I still have it with my 10-year-old handwriting. This is given to my father by my father, who was 10 years old. When he thought I had studied Hafez the whole of the Diwan with him well enough. So actually, in a sense, I've lived with Hafez all my life. I had two intense periods of interaction with him. One in my 20s, I was at MIT before I went to Harvard. I began to compose poetry. Poetry suddenly came to me. And I also began to read Hafez intensely. The period of Hafez reading, not any translation, Persian itself. Persian itself, fortunately, my mother was a highly educated woman. Sometimes I would ask her some difficult passage or something like that that I did not understand, or I'd look it up in the dictionary. So this period of intimacy with Hafez, and I translated some of the ghazals of Hafez into English poetry. And then I went to Iran. For the next 20 years, I did not write any poetry except one ghazal, Sheikh Manu Isaiman, which you have seen. Not, and that came to me. I was giving exams at Tehran University, looking out of the window. That was, I didn't write any poetry, and no poetry of Hafez. And then until I came to America, and I began to write poetry again, which I still do. You've read some of my poems, and you know them. And I stopped really reading Persian literature. I stopped reading almost anything. In the evenings, if I want to read something, I read a ghazal of Hafez. Except for the Quran, that's what I read. But I still live with Hafez, and I think I know him well, and I know there was a lot of interest in Hafez studies in Iran after the Iranian Revolution. It's called Hafez Shanasi in Persian, Hafezology, you might say, so I can invent this term. And Estelami, who has brought out the best edition of the Diwan of Hafez, the 2-volume one. Was a close friend of mine, and I brought him to Tehran University. I know him very well. He was here. He went back to Iran, and we have been in contact together. He's done a lot. So I have other scholars, many, many scholars in Iran. And so Hafez, strangely enough, in the middle of the Islamic Revolution of Iran, has had a tremendous flowering. And I will tell you why this is so later on in our discourse.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Dr. Nas. I heard from someone that you studied Hafez with Allama Tabatabai, one summer. Is that true? Did you spend a summer with Allama Tabatabai studying the Divan of Hafiz?
That's right. This is something which was very intimate, very, very intimate. Allama Tabatabai is this alim, as some of the ulama in Qom would pick up the Divan of Hafiz with pincers so the hand would not touch them because it was haram. Picking up pork chops or something like that. Astaghfirullah. Astaghfirullah. Well, secretly, of course, even the ulama who were interested in Sufism, they all loved Hafiz. But this was the case. The ulama usually kept aloof from Hafiz. But of course, I studied for many years with Allama Tabatabai. He used to come for the summers to a little village north of Tehran near the mountains called Darakeh. I was much cooler, and I would often go meet him. One summer, the classes we took with him were usually several people. I said, I want to study the Divan of Hafiz with you. And he accepted. And it was one-to-one. I would go there, and I would take one ghazal, and this turban man, so sober, so they're singing all these incredible love poems and so on. And someone commented upon it, really. The walls practically spoke. The walls spoke. It was really a cosmic event, almost. Really, one of the great experiences of my life. Yes, I had that experience, and he never taught it to anyone in Qom or in Tehran, to any of his students. But it goes to show what a master he was of the poetry of Hafiz. I mean, an alim with a turban who lived in Ayatollah Khomeini's house when Ayatollah Khomeini was exiled in Qom. And people do not know that Ayatollah Khomeini himself, Ayatollah Khomeini, in the summers, there's a town called Karaj outside of Tehran, about 6 kilometers away, which has a river called the Karaj River, K-A-R-A-J. In the summer, the water goes down. So there's still some water flowing, but rocks come out. And you can even cross the river, although pretty wide, by jumping from one rock to another without really getting wet. And you go and sit down, and you're in the middle of the river. So it's very cool, and the water flows very beautiful. Ayatollah Khomeini, people do not know that, used to go during the summers. He would go to the middle of the river. Of course, he dresses an alim, but he would take off his shirt. He has a sash around his waist and the traditional pants. And read the poetry of Hafiz. And he himself was a very good poet. And his own poetry is inspired a great deal by the poetry of Hafiz. This is very telling. A man who changed the history of Iran, who changed the history of the Middle East, was looked upon in the West as a kind of political maverick, whoever it is, some for, some against him, and so forth, had this other side to him. And you cannot imagine any American president going in the middle of the Potomac River, sitting down and reading mystical poetry. This is why I told Khomeini. So the presence of Hafiz in our culture is really something remarkable. At the end of this discourse, I'm going to say something to you which is historically important about Mohammad Mossadegh, the famous Iranian Prime Minister and Hafiz. We'll get to that later, inshallah.
Inshallah. Well, thank you very much. That's really remarkable, the influence Hafiz seems to have had. Everything from mullahs to people opposed to the mullahs to peasants to kings and everybody in between. So we know Hafiz was famously from Shiraz. He loved Shiraz and he lived in the 14th century. Could you tell us a bit more about Hafiz's life and his context? What did he do for a living?
Hafiz came from the city of Shiraz. He was born in Shiraz. He died in Shiraz. His tomb is beautiful Hafiziyah, just outside of the center of the town. And of course, a beautiful sort of structure has been built on top of it. Doesn't go back to his period, his own day. It was built about a century ago, but the tomb itself and the tombstone go back to his own moment of death. He lived in the 14th Christian century, 8th Islamic century, and he did not travel. He lived all his life in Shiraz. At most, he saw the environs of the town. You know, a few miles out, different towns around the city of Shiraz. Shiraz is in a very beautiful area of the province of Fars, and there's some very beautiful mountains and forests and so forth, and trees and along. He was sometimes apparently would go for walks there, but he was not a good traveler. And his great contemporary, who's as famous as him, Sa'di, he always in Persian says Sa'di or Hafiz, they go together. Sa'di was just the reverse, was really a world traveler. We know he went to India, we know he went to Central Asia. He made a journey as far as Tunisia. Some people think he even went to Morocco. Anyway, he traveled very, very widely in the Islamic world. Hafiz was just the reverse. I will tell you the story which shows his character. Hafiz's poetry is such a miracle that even in his own lifetime, it spread all the way to India. Bengal, which is all the way to the other side of India, east of India, the farthest away province from Persia, always it was a great deal of attraction for Persian poetry. I don't know why this is so. Not that there are other provinces, Gujarat, Uttar Pradesh, and so forth, with that interest, but somehow interest jumped to an extreme form in the other side of the subcontinent. Of course, Persian language had gone step by step, but Bengalis loved Persian poetry, and the King of Bengal, who knew Persian, they read the poems of Hafiz to him. He loved it so much. He said he must come to our country. So he sent a mission with a very important ambassador to Shiraz to bring Hafiz to Bengal, and they sent a special ship, royal ship, and so Hafiz finally accepted. He accepted, and so they went from Shiraz to the Persian Gulf, which is several hundred kilometers, probably a day or two, with camels or horses. I don't know how they went. Anyway, the boat was there. So Hafiz puts one foot in the boat, and the boat goes up and down. He pulls the foot back. He says, "I'm not going." So we send the ship for you. He said, "No, I'm not going." And right there, he wrote a beautiful ghazal. He said, "In place of me, I'm sending this ghazal for the king of Bengal." And it has a very famous verse, Shikar Shikar Shavand, Hame Tutiyan Hand, Zin Qand Parsi, Ke Be Bengali Mi Ravad. That is, may all the parrots of India become satiated by the sugar, Persian sugar, that is not going to Bengal. It's a very famous poem. The sentence, this poem, place of himself to Bengal. So it was a very bad traveler, never went anywhere. But as this story shows, his fame, in contrast, went everywhere very quickly. From Bengal to Istanbul, throughout the Ottoman Empire, Diwan of Hafiz was everywhere, very, very popular. 9/10 of all great Ottoman poets were influenced by him. Yunus Emre's was the more common language. But Ahmed Yesevi, people who wrote in that style of Turkish, and many, many other people down the ages. And the same is true of the whole subcontinent of India. He did not become too popular in the Arab world because he wrote in Persian, not Arabic. And it's the only part of the Islamic world, and perhaps in your part of the world, in West Africa, I do not know, in which he did not become famous. But from Iraq all the way to Malaysia and Indonesia, wherever Islam went, the poetry of Hafiz followed him. And he had a remarkable role to play. And it's very sad that as the West has come to know Islam, sort of through Islamic studies and so forth, well, there has not really been that much attention paid to Hafiz and commentaries upon Hafiz and the meaning of Hafiz as should be. Gertrude Bell was probably the best translator of Hafiz before this new American translator in New York, who was just translated, great. Probably is now the best translation of the Diwan of Hafiz into English. But by and large, we really do not have deep Hafiz studies in English, as we should. And people do not quite realize how important really Hafiz is culturally. I was going to tell this story later, but I'll say it now because it pertains to it. I'll give two stories. The late Aga Khan, grandfather of the president, Aga Khan Karim, Karim Aga Khan, was Aga Khan when I was at Harvard. He was still alive. He was also a good family friend of my uncle. My uncle, the first Iran ambassador to Pakistan, we had a lot of family relations. But I was too young. But I knew Karim very well. He was my student and friend. He used to come to our house all the time, and he loved Persian food. My mother would cook for him. My mother was then with us there, and so forth. So one Christmas, Karim said that his grandfather had called him. His grandfather was very sick in Europe. I think it was Switzerland. So Karim went and came back 10 days later as the new Imam of Ismailism. And I said to him, he spoke to me about everything. I said, what happened? He said, grandfather was on his deathbed. And first of all, he said, I'm passing over your father. Ali Khan was considered a playboy. He married Rita Hayworth, and you know the story. And you're going to become the next Imam after me. And secondly, I have a wasiyah, last will and testament that I want to be carried out. He said, my grandfather, the Al Khan, had two books next to his bed, the Quran and the Divan of Hafiz. He said, this is the only two books for me. You see that Divan of Hafiz? I want you to arrange for this to be translated into English. And that once, and anything they want, anybody. So Karim Khan told me, I was the head of Harvard Islamic Society. I talked to the professors, a committee was formed. Harvard University, he said, I want Hafiz to be taught at Harvard. Asked for $350,000. At that time, a chair was $100,000. They asked for $350,000 for a chair, according to Bishop Al Khan, to teach Hafiz. Al Khan said, give it. He gave the money. Committee meeting, I have a committee meeting formed. I was in all of the meetings at Harvard. What happened at the Reddin? Professor Richard Fry, a professor of Iran studies, who was a very good scholar of Pahlavi, Persia, but not very good, it wasn't bad. Was called Richard Fry and had also Persian sign on his office door. You may have seen it. They took it off and added professor of Al Khan, professor of Iran studies. They got $350,000 and added one short sentence. Not 1 minute was added to the teaching of Persian at Harvard. You're a Harvard man, I'm a Harvard man. It's our own university, it's all right to be criticized. It's the truth. We're talking about a historical event. Nothing was added. Nothing. And even now, Harvard has more chairs of Turkish studies and Arabic studies than Persian. There's no comparison. They have instructors and teachers and so forth, but a full professor that after got $350,000 of 1957 from Al Khan to establish a chair to teach Hafiz, not one professor at your university can even read the Ghazal of Hafiz without making a mistake, I'm sure. I don't mean Persians, I mean the American professors who claim to know Persian. Certainly Fry couldn't. I know Fry very well. He was a friend of mine. We spoke together, but, you know, he spoke like an Armenian Persian who made out this sentence. But to be able to read Hafiz, he couldn't do it. He couldn't do it. The second story, which is also the significance of Hafiz, is on deathbed. In 1953, a major political crisis occurred in Iran. And Mossadegh was then the prime minister of Iran. And the Shah left the country, went to Rome. And there was a danger of the monarchy being toppled. And they said Kermit Roosevelt came and the Americans established the monarchy with $60,000. That's really total nonsense. You cannot, country of 40 million people, you cannot change with $60,000, even in 1953. Anyway, there was big commotion in the street, rallies pro and con. I was not in Cambridge, I was not in Iran. But the son of Mohammad Mossadegh, who was on the prime minister, the famous prime minister, Ghulam Hussein Mossadegh, was a gynecologist and who delivered my two children. We were very close family friends. He told me about it. So it's only one link between the event and myself. And he said, my father, Mossadegh, was right. I studied in Lausanne or Paris as a young man, a Qajar prince. He was sort of secularized Persian. He never showed any signs of being religious or anything like that, or metaphysical, was interested in Sufism, nothing. And he said, my father called me one evening, just before everything finished, and it was toppled. And he said, bring the Divan of Hafiz. Every Persian has the Divan of Hafiz, even Muhammad Musaddiq. So Ghulam Hussein Khan went to his father's office and took a Divan of Hafiz and brought it to him. And he made a fall. You know what a fall is? Where you close your eyes, you say, Ya Hafiz Shirazi, to Mahramahar Razi, and then ask for his help to predict an event. You close your eyes, say, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, and you open it up, and you read the Ghazal before, and the Ghazal after, and interpret it. It's an art to do it. God has given me this intuition. I can do it. Sometimes people come to me, I wanted to do far for them. I don't have time now, but I've done that for many people. Be determinative in their life sometimes. Should I marry this woman or not, or this kind of thing. Anyway, he brought the one of the fact that Mossadegh would make a fall itself is unbelievable. It's like saying President Bush giving a lecture in Arabic in Cairo. I mean, this, just out of one's imagination. Anyway, Ghulam Hussein Khan Mossadegh said, my father closed his eyes, made a prayer, and opened up the Divan and looked at it and read, and about after 30 seconds, the face got turned completely white. He closed the Divan. He didn't tell me what Ghazal it was, but he said, we're finished. That is major political event in the history of Iran. Hafiz is still present. That's the remarkable event. My cousin, my mother's first cousin, Dr. Kianouri, was the head of the Iran Communist Party, Tudeh Party. Studied in Germany, was a famous architect, very well educated. He was a communist. And he would quote Hafiz to defend his cause. This sort of thing. So Hafiz percolates from the highest metaphysical heights to everyday life.
That's absolutely amazing. Well, given that Hafiz's poetry has this miraculous quality of being omnipresent in Persian life, pretty much from his life to today, I wanted to ask if you could share some of your favorite verses or ghazals of Hafiz and maybe comment on them for us just a little bit. I know your father would spend 3.5-4 hours on just one bait. We don't have that much time, but I wanted to ask if you could maybe share some of your favorite baits or favorite ghazals with us and explain to our listeners what makes them so wonderful.
I think what I will do, I will read a few verses of two ghazals. One is one of the famous ghazals of Hafiz. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Shubishnavi sukhane ahledel. Magu ke khataast. Sukhan shanas nei janaman. Khata injaast. سرم به دنیا و عقبا فرو نمی آید تبارک الله از این فتنه ها که در سر ماست در اندرون من خسته دل ندانم چیست که من خموشم و او در فغان و در قوغاست دلم ز پرده برون شد کجای مطرب بنال هان که از این پرده کار ما بنواست مرا به کار جهان هرگز اتفاق نبود. روح تو در نظر من چون این سخن آراست. نخفتم ز خیالی که میپزد دل من. خمار ست شبه دارم شراب خانه کجاست. The translation of Hafiz just like this is not going to be very eloquent, but at least I'll bring out the meaning. When you hear the word of the people of the heart, don't say that it is false. It is you who do not understand the word, my dear. The fault is here, it's in you. My head is not bent either before this world or the next. Tabarakallah, God be praised in this commotion that is going on within my head, within my being. In the middle, of my tired heart. I don't know who it is who is present. For I am silent, but it cries, is shouting and shouting and creating commotion. O Mutrib, O Troubadour, my heart has come out from behind the veil. Now here the word parde has both a musical meaning and the usual word meaning a curtain or a veil. Benal hon, ke asin parde kar ma benavast. Play music, for it is through this music that our heart is in Nava, positive state, happy. مرا به کار جهان های گزلت فاد نبود. I never had that much interest or any interest in the affairs of the world. It is thy face that from my point of view is so beautiful. All right, now I'm going to read a few verses from another Ghazal of Hafez, یوسف گمگشته باز آید به کنعان، غم مخور، کلبه احزان شود روزی گلستان، غم مخور، ای دل غم دیده حالت به شود، دل بد مکن، این سر شوریده باز آید به سامان، غم مخور، گر بهار عمر باشد جز بر تخت چمن، چتر گل بر سر کشی ای مرغ شبخوان، غم مخور، هان مشو نومید چون واقف نه ای از سر غیب، باشد اندر پرده بازی های پنهان، غم مخور، دور گردون گر دو روزی بر مراد ما نگشت، دائما یکسان نباشد حال دوران، غم مخور، در بیابان گر ز شوق کعبه خواهی زد قدم، سرزنشا گر کند خار مغیلان، غم مخور، ای دل ار سیل فنا بنیاد هستی برکند، چون تو را نوح است تشریبان ز طوفان، غم مخور، گرچه منزل به خس خطرناک است، مقصد ناپدید، هیچ راهی نیست، کورا نیست پایان، غم مخور، حال ما در فرقت جانان و برام رقیب، جمله می داند خدای حال گردان، غم مخور، حافظا در کنج فقر و خلوت شبهای تار، گر بود ورد دعا و درس قرآن، غم مخور. Anyone who claims that Hafez was a Zoroastrian and not a Muslim, or is just a heathenist talking about wine, woman, and song, should read this ghazal over and over again. I'm not going to translate the whole thing for you, but I want to turn to just a couple of verses. It says, talk about the spiritual life. So all those stations on the path are very dangerous, and the goal invisible. There is no path that has no end. Worry not. Each rahi nist, kuran nist payan qam makhur. It's one of the most profound advice of human life. From being a student at school to being a spiritual faqir on the path to God. Each rahinis, there's no path that has no end. Everything in this world has a beginning and an end. And then Hafez reveals who he is. Hafez ad kunj faqir. Oh Hafez, you know the ghazals of Hafez always end with his name in the last verse. At the corner of spiritual poverty and the spiritual retreat of these dark nights, because the Sufis used to spend the night invoking the name of God, as long as thy word, the litany, is prayer, and the lesson of the Quran, worry not. I mean, how can someone read like this and this stupid Persian nationalist I'll come along and say that Hafiz was not a Muslim? I mean, how can really sheer, I'm sorry I use this word, but sheer stupidity.
Thank you so much for sharing those, and beautifully recited as well too. I know Hafiz's rhythms are very complicated. It's really nice to hear them.
Thank you, Ari. Thank God, the blessing of God that my father was able to teach me for early life. But you know, of 100,000 Iranians living in Washington, not 10 could read the Ghazals of Hafiz without making a mistake. It's not that easy. It takes a great deal of art of knowing all the metrics of classical Persian poetry, and then the use of the words by Hafiz. It's not that easy, so one should go with them. I remember when I was at Harvard, once Sir Hamilton Gibb was giving a course on Arabic poetry, and he said, not a single person in this class can read these poems as poems. This is not the Divan of Hafiz. This is, would be easier. Even he knew that you didn't expect graduate students at Harvard to read the Divan of Hafiz correctly, but they should read at least Arabic poetry correctly.
Yeah, no, the Persian Urud, particularly for Hafiz's Ghazals, is really...
Yes, it's very remarkable.
It's really remarkable. So I wanted to ask, what is it for non-Persian speakers, what is it about Hafiz's poetry that makes it so magical, so musical, so wonderful that it's enjoyed by everybody? As you said, there are people, Persian nationalists, communists, secularists, mullahs, and everybody in between seems to love Hafiz. What is it about his language, his poetry, that makes it so beloved by all?
First of all, there is in Hafiz what I call sensualized spirituality. The deepest spiritual realities are presented in very, very sensual terms. And so that is pleasing to souls, because sensuality attracts ordinary people, even those who are not attracted to the inner meaning. And in a sense, Hafiz pulls you in with his extremely beautiful description of what appears to be sensual. I mean, description of the hair of a woman. Says to the Zulfiyar, these unbelievable verses of Hafiz. Ordinary people, you know, they're excited by the description. But spiritual people then realize the inner meaning of this. And so it's really a sensualized spirituality. We have some forms of spirituality which are expressed in ascetic terms, some in sort of dry metaphysical language, but some in the form of sensualized poetry, and also in music that can happen, in other forms of art that can happen. You see these statues of Hindu temples, outwardly, you know, so sensual, doing all kinds of strange things that would not be allowed to be published. But it has a spiritual significance. It's not at all that.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And the music of his poetry also seems to be particularly unique. There's a really musical kind of flowing quality to his poetry that makes it, even me, I mean, I have only very basic Persian, but when I hear someone who knows how to recite Hafiz, I kind of close my eyes and sway my head back and forth.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's musicality in other Persian poetry, but there's no poet of the Persian language in whom music is not so much present as poetry. There's a tremendous musicality to Hafiz's poetry. And it's not accidental that of all the poets whose poetry is used in the playing of classical Persian music today on the Tehran radio or television, or you go to Iran to a concert, is Hafiz. Oh yes, Ghazals of Saadi are sung, and Maulana, there's a special form, of course, of Masnavi singing, for the Masnavi order, the Maulavi order. But in ordinary classical Persian music that is performed, more is given to Hafiz, poetry of Hafiz, than any other poet.
Well, that makes sense. I wanted to ask quickly about some of the major themes or motifs in Hafez's poetry? As you said, there's a lot of wine, women, and song. There's this figure of the rend. There's a kind of very strong anti-hypocrisy kind of theme running throughout Hafez. Could you go over some of the major themes of Hafez's Diwan?
Yeah. First of all, Hafez, like many Sufi poets, this is not unique to Hafez, spoke very firmly and openly against religious hypocrisy. That is, those who claimed religious stations for themselves or spiritual character without possessing it. We have also some verses in Sa'di. Of course, Khayyam and many of his verses are very, very critical. So this is something that's not unique to Hafez, but Hafez is some of the most damning, you might say, verses criticizing hypocrisy, which is unfortunately like flu. Every civilization has its own form of hypocrisy. It's not unique to Islamic civilization or to Christian civilization or to secular civilization. We live in a country in which speaks about democracy all the time, but the best friend of Saudi Arabia. There's always political hypocrisy. Every nation has to watch out for its own interests. And so that's the excuse that is made. But it exists part of human life. And Hafez was very, very much against hypocrisy. And in that sense, it's very interesting. Many great Persian poets, and also Arab, they become court poets. They're supported by the powerful and the mighty. The great Shahnameh was given by king, by the Ghaznavid king, Sultan Mahmud, to be composed, that it was commissioned, Ferdowsi to compose it, although they had a fallout afterwards, but originally, this is very, very common. Court poets, many of our poets were court poets. Hafez was one of those people who was always remained aloof from political power. He never was close to the court, to power. He lived simply, he was not very wealthy. Like all the, came from a good family in Shiraz. He was not poor, was not living in the streets, but he was not a wealthy person. And he was a very, very open critic of not only hypocrisy on the level of the highest levels of the government, of the king or the viziers, but in the human order itself, especially those who either possess power or who vie for power. One of the great masters of criticizing hypocrisy.
And then there are many, many great poets of wine in Persian and Arabic, but Hafez really seemed to take it to another level, so much so that some people have gotten confused about the nature of the wine that Hafez is talking about. Is he talking about the thing that comes from grapes? Is he talking about metaphysical? Is he talking about both at once? And, you know, and this applies also to the sexual imagery and all of the other wonderful imagery in Hafez as well, too.
Well, of course, Hafez comes at a time we have had several centuries of history of poetry, both Arabic and Persian, in which wine has been used as a symbol. Perhaps the most famous mystical poem of the Arabic language, Al-Khamriya, of Amr ibn al-Farid, and it's used not only in Persian, but also Arabic, and later on Urdu and other Islamic languages, and Turkish, of course. And so the symbolism of wine is not invented, it can't invent it, but accentuated for the first time by Hafez. But it was the master of treating it. Don't forget, people forget that wine in Islam is haram in this world, but not in the next world. Sharab and tahura, the Quran speaks about the pure wine that is given to the believers in paradise. It's different from pork, which is a negative substance from a cosmological, philosophical point of view. I don't want to get into that now. But there is something positive. Even medically, وَلَهُ مَنَافِعٌ the Quran has certain benefits. Negative effects are worse. And so the Sufis took this on and became a very, very important symbol of going beyond the human state and the means of transcending the human state. And so the sahi who pours the wine, that becomes the sheikh. The cup that bears the wine is the dhikr, the form of the dhikr. The wine is really the dhikr itself, as Ibn al-Faras says. Dhikr Allah is khabar, in spiritual sense. And so it plays such an immense role in Sufism, and of course, with so many symbols, nobody has written with such power about it as Hafiz. شراب تلخ میخواهد که بر افکن بود زورش که تا یک دم رها گردن ز دنیا و شر و شورش. Bitter wine that can overcome a man so for a moment I shall become free of this world and all this evil and commotion. We're all seeking after that wine, which for us we find in tasawwuf, in the inner meaning of Islam, in Islam, and that's how Hafiz founded it. It's very interesting that for this very reason, I said Hafiz speaks to everyone in a sense. He's such a universal poet. Everyone sees in it according to his own capacity. And because it was Hafiz of Quran, this reflects the quality of the Qur'an at the highest level. We get from the Qur'an what we are ourselves. As I told you, I've had this experience from my father and Muhammad Ali Farooqi, Prime Minister of Iran, who were discussing Hafiz or Aghai Asar, the great mystics in Iran, and all the way to a story I will tell you, which shows you how deeply penetrating poetry of Hafiz was. I used to go to Pakistan very often. Originally, the Pakistanis all loved Hafiz. Once I sent 10,000 copies of Hafiz to what was then West Pakistan, that separate from East Pakistan. Our consul in Lahore said, everybody here wants to have a copy of the one. So I went to the Shah and got a fund for it and set it free. And this was 3 weeks later. He wrote me, he said, they're all gone. Could you send another 10,000? We're counting millions of people. Now, that was how much it was appreciated by the grad. That's 50 years ago, 6 years ago. Gradually, now the loss of Persian means people are not attracted. But this story, it goes back to the 1960s, when I used to go to Lahore very often. It was the tomb of a saint outside of Lahore. And in the evening, I went to visit it because usually it was very quiet. Nobody was there. It was beautiful, really. I had a spiritual retreat. I spent a couple of hours there. And then I came out. So, oh my God, how do I get back to Lahore? I saw there was one tanga. You know, tanga is a little horse-drawn carriages that have in Pakistan. And a man sitting there, all of his clothing would not be worth more than $1.50. Torn shirt and so forth and so on. A little hat on, and his eyes half closed. I don't speak Urdu, but I understand Urdu. I said, Assalamu alaikum. And he said, alaikum assalam. And I said, I want to go to Lahore. He said, come. Then he asked me in Urdu, where are you from? And that much I understood. I said, from Iran, from Persia. And he smiled, and I gave him the address. And it started from memory to chant Hafiz. It took 45 minutes, 50 minutes, for the tanga to go from the tomb of the saint to where I was staying in Gulbarak. In Lahore, he was reciting Hafiz. When people talk about Islamic civilization, that's what Islamic civilization is. How the deepest poetry percolated into the whole of the society. There are certain very great masters like Ibn Arabi, who are masters for the elite. An ordinary shopkeeper in Damascus, where he's buried, cannot read Ibn Arabi. There are others like Rumi and Hafiz, whose function was to be like a waterfall. Water comes from above, but it comes all the way down and covers all the levels of reality and hits the ground. And that's the mystery why Hafiz is so much beloved and was beloved for 800 years in the Indian subcontinent until the British destroyed the Persian language. As I said, continue right to our own day. I told you the story of Al Khan, and many of the leaders of Pakistan, they still read Hafiz. We had often discussed with people who become prime ministers of Pakistan and so forth, who knew Hafiz. Even General Ayub Khan, whose book I translated into Persian, alhamdulillah, was never published because I didn't want to do it. The Shah forced me, and I translated it. I couldn't say no to him. And then there was a paragraph in which the president answered. He said, no, don't publish the book. So I threw him the West River basket. Even Ayub Khan knew some poems of Hafiz. I mean, a general who looked like an English general holding staff like this and his dress and so on, completely anglicized in a certain sense, he knew some poems of Hafiz. It's remarkable how this man dominated poetic imagination of so many people. And also within Iran, he's very popular among the Jews and Armenians. One of the best books on Hafiz was written when I was in Iran by an Armenian scholar. Usually the Persians criticize the Armenians in Iran because they keep having an Armenian accent. After 400 years, they don't speak Persian like the Persians. The Jews do. You cannot tell a Persian Jew from a Persian Muslim when they speak Persian. They speak Persian very well. But many of them read Hafiz. Hafiz is very popular among them. Whether it's translated into Hebrew or not, I do not know. I should have investigated that, but it never came my way. But I know that I've had Jewish friends in Iran who were lovers of Hafiz. And so he cut across the various religions that exist in Iran. And of course, all his use of Zoroastrian symbolism, the Atish Kadosh, and things like that, has also made them popular among the Zoroastrians. And modernism and nationalism came, and secularized nationalist Iranians were claiming that Hafiz was not really a Muslim and a Zoroastrian. A lot of the Zoroastrians became more interested in him. But his language is of the highest quality of the Persian language. There are very few Zoroastrian scholars because they went to their own schools who knew Persian that well. So I do not know of a major work on Hafiz by Zoroastrian, as I know by both a Jew and an Armenian, Christian and Jew. But maybe there is, I just don't know about it.
That's really fascinating. I mean, as you say, Hafiz is a poet's poet. It seems like great poets everywhere, from Goethe in Germany to the Ottoman poets, to the poets of the Indian subcontinent, and of course, all of the Persian poets of, you know, various religious and ethnic affiliations, all love Hafiz and are inspired by him. What does Hafiz have to say about poetry itself, or reading the Diwan, spending so much time with Hafiz's Diwan? What can that tell us about poetry itself? What is it that Hafiz's poetry does that prose simply cannot do?
First of all, let me start with this, what you say about Hafiz and Goethe. There's no poet of the Islamic world who's had the influence on a major Western poet as Hafiz has had upon Goethe. Of course, Emerson was also influenced by Sa'di. There's no doubt about that. And he wrote a famous poem called Sa'di. That long poem was also influenced by Hafiz. First of all, Emerson is not as great a poet as Goethe. Goethe is the greatest poet of the German language. And he was very, very deeply attracted to Hafiz. They say he became a Muslim because of that. Became a Muslim or not, we do not know. But anyway, Hafiz played a very, very important role in him and through him and one or two other people in the 19th century German Romantic movement. We do not see the same influence of Hafiz's poetry in other countries, like in France, for example, as we see in 19th century German Romantic poetry. And that is due most of all to Goethe. After all, he's probably the greatest poet of the German language, along with Schiller. And there are apparently very good translations of Hafiz in German also. I can read German, but it's not that good to be able to judge whether it's good poetry or not. But anyway, he became famous in Germany before he became famous in the English-speaking world. Now, the second question you ask, Hafiz doesn't speak much. about this point. Rumi says, I'm not really a poet. For 70 years, it does not appear in the world a person like Attar. In 100 years, that's Satsar Yag Attar Noyat. And Hafez never said, I'm not a poet. He didn't make that claim. Well, this humility, whatever it is. But he didn't talk too much about the art of poetry. It's as if he was poetry, in a sense. And that's why I have this wonderful story that on the Day of Judgment, God asked all the poets to march before him. And all the great poets and came and marched. Ferdowsi, one of the great Persian poets, asked, but where is Hafez? And the voice came from heaven of the archangel. This is the parade of poets. Hafez is the prophet of poets. In another category. So we have stories like that in Persian also. I've always loved poetry. I do the Lindelin myself, but and I know English poetry fairly well. I know French poetry. I've read a lot of German poetry. I know Arabic poetry. I know of no language, perhaps there is, in which you have a figure like Hafez. For example, Sanskrit has beautiful poetry. You yourself, a scholar, know it. You know, and a very beautiful Valmiki, you know, metaphysical poems and so forth. But Hindu farmer outside of Delhi doesn't know any of that poetry. It remains for the Brahmin class and the highly educated class and so forth. And for the Ibn Arabi and Ibn al-Farid, they're very great poets. But they're not for the ordinary. A few verses of Ibn al-Farid have been made into songs and so forth and so on. But Hafez, it's part and parcel of like Persian food. You eat it everywhere, wherever the Persian culture has gone. And it says something and it attracts all the way from the sages and saints to dishdiggers and simple people in the street. That's what's a miracle about Hafez. And it's not easy language. The language of Hafez is not easy. You're a very good linguist yourself. If you've tried to study Hafez in comparison with other poets, you realize that you have to have a master of the Persian language, of the symbolism, of the allusions, of the all the different facets of the work.
Our time is almost up, but I wanted to thank you so much for this amazing introduction to Hafez. As you said, Hafez is really like the Quran in a certain sense. It's very, very difficult. It's incredibly dense. It's very, very deep. And in fact, it echoes the Quran in a lot of ways, but in a certain way, it speaks to everybody. You can just recite it even without knowing all the nuances and the linguistic features and enjoy it and be touched by it and be moved by it very profoundly, as I have during our conversation. So thank you so much for this introduction.